and welcome to the IDEMS podcast. I am Santiago Borio, an Impact Activation Fellow, and I'm here with David Stern, one of the founding directors of IDEMS. Hi, David.
Hi, Santiago. Looking forward to another discussion. What's on the table today?
We recently had an episode on games and advertising, and there were still questions that I had that I feel need answering to complete that introduction that we gave.
Okay.
So part of our business model is creating public goods and offering services related to those public goods.
Inclusive services.
Can you...
You're right, sorry. We're offering services in general, and our discussion last time was all about these models around trying to create inclusive services, where we have digital services which are inclusive, where there is a paywall which you can opt out of so that nobody is excluded because they can't afford to pay or have to be served by somebody else's priority.
Like advertisers.
Like advertisers. Yes, exactly.
So we are trying to develop a system where we go straight to the end user.
No, it's not that we just go straight to the end user. The point which is so difficult on this, and where it's all theoretical still at the moment for us, but the point which I feel so strongly about is that I believe that in the digital world of today and tomorrow, there are so many people who are being left out because they cannot afford it. They can't afford to. And this is having all sorts of divisive effects on our society. And so I believe that for services which, not just public services, but public serving services, things which are in the public's benefit, things which have positive social impact, we need to find alternative business models than the commercial business models for digital services that currently exist.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. That word inclusive, I now understand what you mean by it. Yep. We want to offer inclusive services around our public goods. In this case, we were talking about games, game apps, or apps with multiple games, potentially, for mobile phones. And we mentioned in that episode a meeting that we had, yourself, David, myself, and Chris Marsh, our software development lead. We were discussing how we would get revenue and what services we could provide. And in the previous episode, we said we want an opt-out paywall. But an opt-out paywall to what, precisely? Because my understanding from that meeting was that the games would still be free and open for anyone, but the paywall would be for specific services around the games.
The way I like to think of this is, because if what we're developing is open source, there's no point putting the actual game itself behind a paywall because it's open source. Someone could just release another version of it using the same code base and make it cheaper or put adverts in, and you may as well use that. And this idea, this thinking has really come from open educational resources, where you don't want the content behind a paywall because you want anyone anywhere to be able to access the content, that sort of part of the educational rights that everyone should have. But there are elements of the gaming which would be enhanced through, I would argue, what we call digital services, but services that require us to have and manage server infrastructure in a way which maybe the game itself does not. That can just run on your device. This could be any element of multiplayer, where you need to have the server infrastructure to be able to play with other people. Although even that, we might say that being able to play with other people, that should be free. But maybe being able to choose to only play with your friends, that might be a digital service. And these sorts of things, these are, I don't know, we'll need to see.
I get very excited with one particular game where there's online competitions on who gets the maximum points in 3 days.
Yeah.
I really like those. Is that the sort of thing that you're suggesting?
Yes, maybe, and this is one of the interesting things because, of course, this is what attracts most people to the games. So putting that behind a paywall is the opposite of what most games would try to do. And so I'm not sure that's what we mean or not. This is where all of this is still hypothetical. What I do know is running the server infrastructure is a cost on top of actually creating the game. So in this particular case, the cost of creating the game to us is a bit of your time because you're the one who's actually got the passion to do this. We already know from management research or whatever you want to call it over the years, introducing elements where members of staff are working on passion projects as part of their workload is nothing but good for organizations. So supporting you to do that.
That served Google incredibly well. I believe that Google Docs was one of these passion projects.
And there's many such instances within this. And yes, and that's exactly what we want to do, to encourage our team to stay innovative, to be doing things they want to be doing alongside the work that they need to do for us to continue to exist as an organization.
This point reminds me of the enabling opportunity principle episode from the, no, sorry, the set that you did with Danny,
Okay.
where you explored that idea of enabling people, your staff, to actually do what they're good at and what they want to do.
You've obviously been processing the Principles podcast recently.
Yeah, I have. And I would recommend any listener to is interested about items and how we work and the principles that guide us to look for the Items Principle, another podcast series. And I am currently advertising something.
Well, I was just going to say, and be careful, that was advertising there. Now, admittedly, this is where there's a fine line between a genuine recommendation, which I think there was an element of that, and actual advertising. Now, I don't know quite why you're advertising it. I quite like it. But anyway, while we're talking about advertising, this is a good topic to raise.
Yes, indeed. So we talked about the cost of producing the game. The cost, in this case, is my time, but there is all this digital infrastructure that is needed for games to be fully engaging and immersive in some way.
Exactly. I'm sure when people do try and play your game, they'll feel, oh, there's a lot of work that could be done to make this better. And that's exactly the point. This is where actually those iterative processes, which good games go through all the time, we don't want a game which is sort of stuck, which doesn't develop. You want a game which continues to develop, to evolve, and to become better and serve its audience better.
Yes, but as you said, open source release of the game means that we need to be able to offer services. We talked about some of the services that we could offer, but aren't we, by offering those services, creating paywalls?
What do you mean, creating paywalls?
Because those would be paid services, wouldn't they?
But with opt-out of payment options. This is the whole point. This is our inclusive services. We want them to be inclusive. Now, if they're only for fun, then that's one thing. But the whole point is that we actually want to make them so that they're serving the community. They're actually serving people in a way which actually adds value. That is adding educational value or social value in some form. And we still don't know, particularly with the case of games. And you can see how ambitious this game is with the idea that it can be developed by one person. This is a good little indie game at the very best.
As we said in the previous episode, this is a thought experiment that we are actually acting on and trying out. So it might go nowhere.
We'd expect it to go nowhere, but it might not. And this is the key point that actually one of the things which excited all of us about this is the fact that actually these relatively simple puzzle games they do gain traction. There is a demand, there's a hunger for them. And there is a frustration with the current business models around them. Now, that doesn't mean that we have the answer for a better business model yet, but I'm sure if we can find something, there's lots of indie game studios or people developing this who may then adopt this. And it's not just about us. They're putting more work in than us. It would serve them more than it would serve us. This is where, at the moment, there aren't the models there that I would love to follow. There are models where you can ask for a donation, buy the developers a coffee, or whatever it is. There are all sorts of interesting models out there. But I believe that a model of inclusive services, I've not seen it in a way I'd like. And yet I think that there is the potential there to create business models which are more socially positive than the models that currently exist. And that's what this is really about.
Yes, and there is another aspect of the social benefit that we can create through this. We are developing the app builder, which is intended to allow people to freely create apps in interesting ways, and this could inform future development of the app builder.
Absolutely, and this is the whole point, that we're not looking to really compete with Unity as a sort of game building environment.
I think it would be quite a challenge to compete with Unity at this point in time.
It's not on our agenda. But the point is that actually that idea that many games are built using these powerful tools, providing a tool which would enable people to be able to focus on building. Well, we're mostly interested in socially impactful apps, be they games or not. That's part of what we're wanting to do. And taking the idea that you'd have a whole series of apps built in this way, as Unity has successfully created immense number of games which are built using Unity. And I hope you've noticed that actually they're pretty good at the advertising side of it, because by default, your game then comes with the fact that it's been built in Unity.
Yeah.
And this is normal.
But at the same time, we have the philosophy that if people want to use the app builder for commercial purposes, they can.
Absolutely.
And then we wouldn't stop anyone from creating an app or a game with the app builder, with improved app builder, with the gaming functionalities. We wouldn't stop anyone from creating a game that goes back to the model of advertising. That is up to the individual to make their decision what business model they want to implement.
And I think what the hope is to demonstrate that there are new and different options. This is one of our principles. You've gone through the principles. Options by context. We're really coming from a context where social impact, positive social impact, is the driving force. And in that context, we believe there are currently not a full range of options available. Now, in the commercial context, there's a more complete range of options which people have tried and tested. And we're not against any given one of those or for a particular one. The fact that we're looking to try to expand the set of social enterprise models is just part of what we see as the development of social entrepreneurship, which is, I would argue, still in its infancy.
Yes, and we are not necessarily against companies that aim to maximize profit. It's a different model, and we believe that we could potentially outcompete them.
This is, I think, the key point, that I think we do believe that actually maximizing profit is something which should be outcompete in the future by companies that take a social entrepreneurship approach. If we didn't believe that, I would never have started IDOS. And I think we're getting to rather a serious point from rather a light topic. But I think this is a serious point, that I think the world we live in has got to the stage where we have seen when maximizing profit is the only route, this can lead to companies and organizations being less stable than you'd want, being, I would argue, working less well for themselves, being more short-term than you'd want them to be, not actually serving the organizations, there being more failures. And I believe that there's a growing recognition that alternative models could lead to real improvements for business to be able to have multiple or more options. There are companies that have taken the route from being for-profit to a not-for-profit route very recently, actually. There's this Proton who develops sort of cybersecurity, very secure systems, Proton Mail and things like this. And they recently got a business model in Switzerland, which means that their for-profit component is now serving a non-for-profit entity. And the way they've done this and the reasons behind it are so interesting. And the reason I wanted to stay on that serious topic for just a minute before we go back to the lighter topic is that this is not us who are just doing this. We are thinking about things which I don't know many others thinking about in the same way. But the set of people doing this, actually thinking about these things in society at the moment, is actually large. And so this is something I think it's important to state, which is part of a broader discussion happening right now in different circles in different ways about how can business be societally positive. I'm happy to now jump back into the games topic, but I did want to just draw that out.
Yeah, and that is very interesting, and I will question you further in another episode, or maybe you'll discuss it with Kate, who knows. It is definitely an interesting area to discuss, but this is about the games and the advertising. We said we wouldn't add advertising into our games. Now, there is another question as to how are we going to get our games out there? Because we don't want to engage in advertising either, do we?
No. That's a tough one, isn't it?
It is a really difficult one. Organic growth is possible. Things can go viral, but it is a very difficult thing to get a game out there, especially with the algorithms that exist now that depend on the number of downloads, where you come in the searches. I'm really not sure how, if I do manage to develop a game that is interesting enough for people to play, how are we going to get out there?
Very simple. It's obvious. We're going to do it through our education programs. Because the whole point is, if we are developing games which are educationally sound, which is really where we're wanting to start, which are developing critical reasoning, then we integrate them and we embed them into our education and we allow them to grow out of that. And so this is, I think, the key, and this is part of my sort of thinking. I believe that there are routes whereby we, as an organization, tie together some of these different ideas. This is why, as an organization, our diversity is so important. Embracing diversity, another one of our principles. And so we're not going to get it out as a game studio would get it out, because that's not who we are. We're not wanting to pick up users because we're just wanting to pick up users. No, we're wanting to put it together as part of the package of the different things that we've got related to education in different ways. Now, is this going to happen fast? Is it something where I'd expect us to virally the games to suddenly take off? No. Maybe they will. Maybe some people would start sharing them and then they'll have organic growth. But that's not the point. The point is really about trying to say, okay, we want to have this set of different things which are built up using open technologies, built on good open principles, which are serving sound educational processes. So let me, for example, say, if we got a game where we believe we're really onto something here, and this is going to be really good because it'll help critical reasoning, then I'd want to do a research study. to get evidence of impact, that yes, this actually improves critical reasoning. And that's not advertising, that's actual evidence. Now you get evidence, getting media support to evidence, that's a whole different thing. So if we could get evidence of impact, that's where this gets interesting.
Oh, and I hate so much those adverbs where they refer to IQ improvements due to the game, and if you look into it, there's zero evidence behind that, behind those claims. If we could actually back things up.
The point is, I'm not interested in doing anything which can't be backed up because it might be having a negative impact. So I'm not sure I want it to get out to scale until we know it has a positive impact. And for us to know it has a positive impact, we need the research studies. This is a fundamentally different way of thinking about marketing, about all these things. Actually, it's a little bit of a spoiler, but Kate and I have been discussing exactly what this package is about, and she's come up with a fantastic name for it. And this is an approach which we're putting together which relates to all this. It's all about building not just one thing, but thinking about the fact that we want to be an engine for groups, organizations, even individuals looking to build things which are socially impactful in ways which are genuinely thoughtful, evidence-driven, and collaborative, above all else.
Great. So here I was thinking that I would spend about 2 months developing a game that we would release and it would go viral and all sorts of people would be using and it would be giving us revenue and so on. But no, there's much more behind it, as always, in your head.
Of course. It could still start there. But that's certainly not going to be the bit that I'm pushing for, the going viral before we've got evidence of impact. Getting evidence of impact, you know this from our work with the Parenting for Lifelong Health. That requires a good randomized control trial, which costs about $1 million and takes at least 5 years to get to evidence. That's not true. You could probably accelerate it down for a few years, maybe 2 or 3.
And maybe a randomized control trial is not the best methodology. We have to think about what research method is most appropriate and so on and so forth.
Let's be clear on this. A good randomized control trial is a good form of evidence. But that does not mean that there aren't other ways to get good evidence, especially once you have a digital intervention, because then you can flip everything around and you can do research in different ways, which people are not thinking about yet. So once you've got a digital intervention, it opens the door to new research methods, which are really exciting and new. But anyway, that's a whole nother point, a whole nother story.
I look forward to editing a podcast episode where you discuss it with Lucy.
I think you're right. This is a topic that Lucy is really interested in as well. So I do look forward to recording that episode.
Okay. David, I think that it's going to be a few months before we update people on our gaming initiative. Any last thoughts before we close this topic for the moment?
Yeah, I think months might become years. But it's nice to have these side projects and to allow them to just evolve and take a life of their own. So it's great.
You mentioned Kate and names. This is not a side project. This is a flank activity.
You're absolutely right. Thank you, Kate, for giving us language to be able to talk about these things. What a wonderful flank activity. I look forward to carrying on.
Great. Thank you, David.
Thank you.